We dive in chakras. According to the practice of the Vasikin, the expression Vasikin, when it appears in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch refers to Hasidim, who like to be the Dabbik and Mitzvahs in a special way. Minig Vasikin, Shulchan Aruch, they sometimes talk about Minig Vasikin. Some people make a mistake, they think it's Minig Vatican. It has nothing to do with the Vatican. Minig Vasikin means Hasidim, Anshei Maaseh, have a certain practice. So the Gemara says that based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Yiruuchim Shamish, Lifnei Yareach Dor Dorim, we demonstrate our fear for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the sun is coming up. Other people are worshipping the sun because the sun gives energy, the sun gives warmth, and it causes all the fruits and the vegetables to grow. The sun has such power, so there were those who thought the sun was a deity. So we demonstrate that as the sun is about to rise, that we believe in monotheism and HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything in the world, including the sun. So the Minig Vasikin is to recite Kriya Shema immediately before the sun rises, and to say Shemon Esrei immediately after the sun rises. Yiruuchu Im Shamash. We demonstrate our fear for God as the sun is about to come up, and right after the sun comes up. The Gemara tells about one of the Chachamim, one of the Amoraim, who davened Vasikin one day, and he had a smile on his face all day long. He was so excited. So when we read the Gemara, we don't understand what's the big deal. There are people, there are Vasikin Minyanim today, all over the world, where they do every day like that. What's so surprising that he davened Vasikin, he said Kriya Shema before, in the Shemon Esrei after the sun rose. So the Rabban, who was the rabbi in Barcelona, writes in his commentary on that Gemara that the big Kiddush was, they had no clock and they had no watch. So they have to say Kriya Shema as they have to guess, when do they think the sun is going to rise? So 353 days out of 354 days a year, they guessed wrong. They would start davening, they would finish Kriya Shema, and they would have to pause till they would say Shemon Esrei after the sun would rise. So they would be lacking Smichas Kula L'Tzila. And on one day, out of the whole year long, this Chacham, who didn't have a watch, didn't have a clock, he was Mechavin, so he said Birchas Kriya Shema. He said Kriya Shema at a normal pace. And right after he finished Kriya Shema, the sun came up, and he said the Shemon Esrei. He had a smile on his face all day long. Once a year, once in a long, long time, he was able to say Vasikin. Today we have clocks, we have watches, we have this manim of sunrise for all over the world. So it's easier for us to daven Vasikin. Yeah. Well, the roosters crow at the crack of dawn. We say the bracha on Erev Tzemach Tzemina earlier, before sunrise. That's before sunrise. No, but you still don't know when the sun rises. You're supposed to say Kriya Shema later than the roosters are crowing. There is a debate in Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Megillah says that l'chatchila is not proper to fulfill a mitzvah. There are some mitzvahs that have to be fulfilled in the daytime, and some mitzvahs that have to be fulfilled at nighttime, like Sefiras HaOmer, supposed to be at night, and Lulav, and Hallel, and many other mitzvahs, but many other mitzvahs have to be fulfilled in the daytime, like from the Gila in the daytime. So the Mishnah says that l'chatchila, a mitzvah that should be fulfilled in the daytime, we should wait till after sunrise. It's only b'di'evet, or if you have a big shas hadchak, that we allow you to shake the lulav before the sun rises. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that there's a major dispute among the poskim. What about the daven shachris and the first minyan? The first minyan recites Shemon Esrei before sunrise. Is that only because it's a shas hadchak? But l'chatchila, it's not proper to say Shemon Esrei of shachris before sunrise, just like lulav, just like halal. Or perhaps we should say say that davening shachar should be an exception to the rule, because davening shachar, this man of tvila, was instituted by the chachamim corresponding to this man of akrobas akarbonis. And the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnah tells us that every single day of the year, they always brought the carbon tumid shal shachar way before sunrise. They brought it on his hair b'nei adisrach, way before sunrise. So this is a dispute. So the Pri Chadash, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, is of the opinion that it's permissible l'chatchila to daven Shmoneh Esrei, even by an early minyan. You won't have this special hidur of the Hasidim Anshei Maisa that we call Vazikin. Vazikin means you say Kriya Shema right before sunrise, the Shema Nesrei right after. But for those who are not considering fulfilling Vazikin, so the Bechadish is of the opinion that it's Mutal HaTchila to say Shema Nesrei of Shachris before sunrise, because Shachris corresponds to the Korban Damid, and the Beis HaMikdash, they always brought it before sunrise. Many other poskim disagree, and the Mishnah Berurah poskim against this Bechadosh, the Kahanim and the Beis HaMikdash, was reason hang. They had the Bezna HaGadol, the Sanhedrin was on their tail, to make sure that they did everything properly. So that was permissible for them to bring the Tamei Shel Shachar before sunrise, and if no Hashash, that they'll bring it way too early. But for us, even though the Zman of the Davening was instituted, corresponding to the Zman of the Korbanos, but this part should be an exception to the rule. We should not be permitted to daven Shmoneh Esrei of Shachris before the sun rises. So the Mishnah Berurah says L'chumra on this matter. It's not right to daven by an early minyan when they're going to say Shmoneh Esrei before sunrise, unless you have a big shas atchak. And other poskim disagree, many others disagree, and hold like the Pri Chadash. Rabbi Yitzchak spoke before about the Avos Shvuyim that was in the 10th century when the pirates kidnapped four rabbonim just to hold up the Jewish communities, four different Jewish communities, for money for the ransom. So the Chida writes in one of his svarim, the Chida wrote over 80 svarim, so the Chida writes in one of his svarim that the long tefillahs of Hurakum that we add to the davening on Mondays and Thursdays consist of three different sections. Each of the three sections was composed by three of the Rabbonim of the Avos Shvuyim. The first section ends with the line Kikel Rachum Achanan Oto. The second section ends again with Kikel Melachanam Rachum Oto. And the third section ends with the So the Chida writes L'Halacha that it's not proper to be mapstick to talk in the middle of each one of the sections of Hurakum, even though we finished Shmoneh Esrei already and the Chazan finished Chazoras Hashatz. But it's not proper to be mapstick in the middle of Hurakum. So he says between the first section and the second section, or between the second section of Hurakum and the third section, so there's more room to be makel if it's necessary to be mafsik. In the Shulchan Aruch it says in Simen Aleph that one should try to daven with kavanah. A lot of times the minyan daven so quickly, not only is it extremely difficult to daven with kavanah, it's difficult to pronounce all the words. So the Shulchan Aruch recommends in Simen Aleph, in the first chapter in Shulchan Aruch, that tov mi'at the kavanah, mi'arbe shalom the kavanah. Better to say less with kavanah than to say more without kavanah. They say that Rabbi Hutner, Zachar Levracha, from Chaim Berlin, coined his own expression, that tov mi'at shalom the kavanah, mi'arbe shalom the kavanah. If they cover kol, you're not going to have kavanah. So it's better to cut down on the davening, say less. That's why many shul, many yeshivas, they only abridge the slichas. They don't say all of the slichas, because the people don't know the pirush amilas. So what they say, they don't understand anyone. So many follow this recommendation of Rabbi Hutner, told me at shalai b'kavon, and they have shalai b'kavon. So there are people who don't even attempt to say the long b'hurachum every Monday and Thursday. they say slowly one section. So on Monday, they'll say the first section. So, Kikel Melech HaNerachamata. And on Thursday, they'll say the second section, which ends with Kikel Melech HaNerachamata. And the next Monday, they'll say the third section. Every Monday and Thursday, they'll say one section or two sections. When the Chazan starts saying Tachnon, so they'll say Tachnon also. Not Mechuyev to say, it's better to abridge the Pesuk in the Zimra. Told me at the Kavana, the Abish Lot Kavana. No, I say the Chitor writes that the three sections of the Horacham were composed by the three different Shvuyim, by three of the Shvuyim. So there are some people who have the practice, rather than attempt to say the long Bahurachom, and they'll have to be gobbling up words, they'll be missing syllables and missing words, so they say slowly, Tovniyat Bekavon and Mehat Beshleb Bekavon. So they'll say one section, or maximum two sections of Bahurachom instead of all three. Say one section slowly. Same Sukkah de Zimra. If the shul is davening very quickly, the only way for the person to say all the Pesukim in Zimra is to say the words so quickly, he will barely be able to pronounce all the syllables. So it's better to leave out sections of Pesukim in Zimra. So they have rules and regulations in Shulchan Aruch what to skip when one is interested in abridging the Pesukim in Zimra. In the yeshivas, they tell over the story that Rav Yitzchak mentioned that Rabbi Shabbat Rav Hanoch was in the shul in Cordova, and the Rav was giving a shiur, and they couldn't figure out the pshat in the Mishnah. Moshe Rav Hanoch told them the correct pshat, so the rabbi resigned from his position, and he said they should accept this visitor, this man whom they just redeemed, as the rabbi, because he knows how to learn much better than him. So the yeshivas, they say over the story that the rabbi was learning Mishnayis Yuma, and the Mishnah says when the Kangodol on Yom Kippur had to do the Avodah, so the Kangodol went to Mikveh five times, because the Avodah was done in five different units. First he did a unit of Avodah in Bigdei Zohar, then in Bigdei Lovan, then in Bigdei Zohar, then in Bigdei Lovan, then in Bigdei Zohar. So when you put on a new Bigdei Kuna, a new set of Bigdei Kuna, you have to go to Mikveh. Each time he puts on Bigdei Kuna, he went to Mikveh, so it adds up to five times. So they were bothered, the Baba Batra were learning, so they were bothered with the Kasha that the Halacha says in the Mishnah Yisuma, Alkol Hazo'o Tvilo. Every time the Kangolo does a Hazo'o of the sprinkling the dam, he has to go to Mikveh. So that's much more than five times. There are many more Hazo'o than five, so they were stuck. They didn't know the answer. This Mishnah, Alkol Hazo'o Tvilo, contradicts the other din that says also in the Mishnah is that the Kangol only was table five times on Yom Kippur. So the guest in Shul, Rav Moshe Reb Hanoch, said, no, Al Kol Hazor Tvila doesn't mean that the Kangol goes to Mikveh each time he's about to do a Hazor. He does Tvila's Etzba. He dips his finger from his right hand into the container, into the klisharis that has the dam of the carbon. He has to dip his finger in each time and do the Hazor. Dip his finger in a second time, do a second Hazor. But Tvila in the Mikveh, on the Kangarol, that's only five times on the whole Yom Kippur. He does it. Kol Hazor Tvila doesn't go, that doesn't mean the Kangarol is table on the Mikveh each time. Rabbi Yitzchak pointed out that the Rif started out in Fez, in North Africa, and then there was a pogrom. At that time he had to run away, so he came to Lucena. So in the history books they record, very fascinating, he was 75 years old when he started his new career as the Rosh Yeshiva in Lucena. And it continued for something like 15 years, for quite a while. That's like the Gemara says about Rabbi Akiva. Misha Hoyelo Bonim, if a person had children when he was young, he should try to have more children when he's older. Based on the Pasuk, Babaykez Raz Harecha V'Lahera V'Atanach Siyadecha, young children when he's older, because you can never tell which children will be better. So Rabbi Akiva had so many thousands of students, and then they all died, and then he had a few students later in life, and those five Talmidim, those five Tanaim, were the ones who transmitted the whole Torah Shebal Peh. So the Rif did like Rabbi Akiva in his old age. He started a whole new career at the age of 75 here in Spain. And his mom made wonderful talmidim from his second mahadura, from his second wife. The sefer that the Rif has there are a few tshuvas Rif that are quoted by the Paskim, but the Rif is known for his sefer, which is a kitzur of the Talmud Bavli, as Rabbi Yitzchok pointed out. And every topic that the Gemara raises, so the Gemara sometimes has a machlokes, a bai v'rove, or kashas and rayas back and forth from other mishnayos and brises, and the Gemara will finally come to a conclusion. So the Rif leaves out the whole shaklat atarya and all the kashas and all the terutzim. He'll just bring the topic and the machlokes, and then he'll give you the maskar. So this is how he abridged the Talmud Bavli. Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi Hasagas on the Rif. One of his major hasagas, one of his disputes with the Rif was, you cannot abridge the Talmud. When the Talmud asks a kasha from another Mishnah, from a Braisa, and they give an answer, many times you can see Chidushi Halacha from the assumptions that were made by asking the kasha, and many times there's going to be a Chidush when they'll give the answer. He's just going to quote the first line in the sugya, what the topic is, and says, Achlekes Abai Berovet, and we pass my Berovet, or we pass my Abai. You're not going to bring the whole shakel of Atari, the whole back and forth discussion in the Gemara. You'll be missing big chunks of ideas that are relevant to Machal Maisa. So this is one of the major hasagas, this is one of the major points of dispute of the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, who wrote his hasagas in the Sefer Amor HaKotan. We mentioned the other day, he lived in Lunel, in Provence, and the name of the city Lunel means the moon, so he called the Sefer Amor HaKotan until he got to Nezikin. He says, when you study Nezikin, it's very difficult, it's very complicated, so the moonlight is not sufficient, you need the light of the sun. So on Nezikin, till the end of Shas, he calls it Amor HaKotan. Up until Nezikin, the commentary of the Baal Hamor is called the Amor HaKotan, based on the name of the city where he lives through now. And from Nezikin through Chulin, he calls the Sefer Amor HaGadol. So the Rif, first of all, his Kitzur Halachas, it's called Hilchos HaRif. It's an abridged form of the Talmud. He left out the whole Shaklat Atalya, the back and forth discussion with all the kashas and all the answers. It just gives you a topic and a psak, a topic and a psak. Every so often the Rif will quote from the Talmud Yerushalmi, an idea which will not appear in the Bavli. Every so often the Rif will quote a tshuva from Rav Haigoin, that's important halach lamaisa, or sometimes an interpretation in the Talmud in the name of the Gaonim. And it's interesting, the Ramban Sefer Mulchamas Hashem to defend the Rif from all of the kashas of the Sefer Hamor. So the Ramban writes himself, Ramban writes in his introduction that the study of Talmud is not like mathematics. You can never really have a rigorous proof that something is absolutely right or absolutely wrong. He says Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, the author of the Sefer Hamor, has so many kashas against the Rif. He says the kashas are not insurmountable, and very often when the kashas seem to be insurmountable, even Moshe Rabbeinu, even the Rabbanu Shlomo, wouldn't be able to answer these murderous kashas, the Ramban shows a way out of the kasha. Very often the Ramban himself says, I don't agree with the Rif. I agree with the Rabbeinu Mizrahi Halevi. But the Rabbeinu Mizrahi writes with such chutzpah. Rabbeinu Mizrahi Halevi is only 19 years old. He writes in his poem that he wrote as an introduction to his commentary on the Rif, he writes he's only 19 years old, and he's writing these points of disagreement with the Rif. So the Ramban says such a chutzpah at such a young age to disagree with the Rif was the Poisek HaMekubal. Like disagreeing with the Mishnah Brewer in our generation, and disagreeing with Rav Moshe Feinstein. So a young person is quite a chutzpah to write with such sharp the shyness of disagreement. So the Ramban wrote the Sefer Mulchamas Amas Hashem, defending the Rif, and very often he himself agrees with the Rabbeinu Zerachia, but he's only defending the Rif because he thought it was a little too chutzpedik, the way the Baal HaMor wrote Hasogas. The same, the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvahs, very often when he tries to figure out which are the 613 mitzvahs, so the Rambam will very often take issue with the Sefer Halachas Gedolos with chutzpah. And he'll write absolutely ridiculous what the Sefer Halachas Gedolos writes. So the Ramban wrote a running commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs where he defends the Halachas Gedolos, and he himself writes, very often he personally agrees with the Rambam, but to make the Halachas Gedolos into to ridicule his position is not right. He says he can be, his position can be defended. So the same style of writing that he has in the Hasokas on the Sefer HaMitzvahs to defend the Halachas Gedolos, that's the style that he wrote in the Sefer Melchamos, where he defends the Rif, not necessarily always agreeing with the Rif, and not necessarily always agreeing with the Halachas Gedolos. A lot of times he agrees with the Rambam or with the Baal HaMor, but he felt that the opinion of the earlier Gedolim was not indefensible. It was mentioned before that one of the very prominent students of the Rif was the Rebbe Migash, Rabbeinu Yosef Ibn Migash. The Rambam, the story goes that the Rambam got a bracha from the Rebbe Migash when he was a young child. And because of that bracha, he refers always to the Rebbe Migash as Rabboisai. Whenever he quotes something from the Rebbe Migash, he writes about the Rebbe Migash an expression, Sichlo Mavis Bechol HaTalmud. He was such a super genius, he was phenomenal. He was frightening, his knowledge. Rambam writes about the Rebbe Migash, his knowledge of Talmud was Mavis, was frightening. And the Rambam writes, when he's talking about the Rebbe Migash, he can only happen with a mistake in 5 or 10 places in Kol HaTorah Kula. So the Rambam usually agrees with the Rebbe Migash to the extent he was so kafuf to the Rebbe Migash that the poskim write halacha l'maisa, that if the Rambam and the Rebbe Migash agree and everybody else disagrees, we only consider it as if it's one shita. We don't count it as two shitas, and it has a nafkamina halacha l'maisa. If there's a shaila in Dini Mominis and there's a machlokas haposkim, so many poskim say that if I am holding, possession is 9/10 of the law, as the secular legal system claims, and that comes from the halacha, hamoytze mechaveroi, all of haraya. Whoever is muchzok on the money, whoever has the property, the money is in his possession, so the burden of proof is on the one who wants to extract the money from me, and rov is not sufficient to be moitzi mamon. In halacha the mamon achar harov. So what if there's a machlokas haposkim whether I'm mechuyif to pay, and the rov of the poskim say I have to pay, and I say but I'm muchzok kim li kehamiyut. I hold like the minority opinion. Wait a minute, I hold. I'm a balabas. I'm not entitled to an opinion, but I'm muchzok on the money. So a rov is not sufficient to be moitzi mamon. So I have a right to say I want to continue holding on to my mamon. So the poskim have the traditional psak is, if the minority opinion is one sheet the yichidor, there's one opinion that says I have a right to hold on to the money, and everybody else disagrees, I have no right to say kimli gishita sayachid. But if there are two or more opinions who say that I'm entitled to the money, then I have the right to say kimli. So the poskim say halacha lemaisa that if it's the Rambam agreeing with the Rebbe Migash, that doesn't count as two opinions. Because the Rambam was so kafuf to the Rebbe Migash, that's the expression that he writes, Sichlo Mavis Bechol HaTalmud. His knowledge of Gemara was so frightening, he was so awestruck by him, that he naturally followed his opinion. So this is relevant, halacha l'maisa. The Rebbe Migash is known for several of his famous opinions, and one of them happens to be in Dini Mominis, and we don't paskin like the Rebbe Migash, even though the Rambam seems to agree with the Rebbe Migash. The din is that when a couple is married and the wife dies, so the husband gets the Yerusha. So the Mishnah says, the Halacha says, the husband only gets the Yerusha b'muchzok and not b'ra'ui. So what does it mean, ra'ui? So there are two types of ra'ui. One kind of ra'ui is, let's say the wife passes away, and after the wife dies, then her father dies, or her rich uncle dies, and she gets a Yerushin. So that for sure the husband doesn't Yarshin. The wife didn't have it while she was alive, so the husband doesn't get it. What if the wife had lent out money to someone else, and she didn't have a chance to collect the money, a halvoa? She didn't have a chance to collect the halvoa before she died. So with respect to a bechor being entitled to pishnayim, bechor only gets pishnayim, a double share, a double portion, and bechor asher yimotzei lo, whatever the father has in his possession at the time of death. So the bechor is not entitled to a double portion pishnayim b'ra'ui, only b'muchzak. So there we pass, and there are two types of ra'ui. Nichzei de'avua de'aba, let's say if the grandfather dies after the father dies, so for sure the bechor doesn't get pishnayim. And if the father has money in the bank, in a savings account or a checking account, that's a loan, that's a halvoa, so also the bechor doesn't get pishnayim. So the Rimagash and the Rambam seems to agree with the Rimagash. They feel that that halacha, that a halvoa is considered ra'oi, and is only relevant with respect to bechor. The bechor doesn't get pishnayim. But habal yarish es ishtoi, with respect to that, the husband should yarshin, even the halvoa. And we don't follow the Rimagash and the Rambam there, because we consider that a shita yichidor, a lone opinion, and we follow the Balei HaTosfos, who say all over in Shas, whenever the topic comes up, Tosfos says that the husband doesn't get pishnayim in the halvoas that the wife had made. Let's say the wife has money in a savings account, that's considered a halvoa. The Rimagash is known for other things. There is one very famous din from the Rimagash again. The Rambam quotes it, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, la'alocha, and we do follow the Rimagash, even though Tosfos disagrees. And we do follow the Rambam and the Rimagash. Let's say you take cheese, which you take milk, which is obviously milchik, and you want to take rennet from an animal. You put in a spoonful of rennet into a big... rennet is from the lining of the stomach. When a calf drinks milk from its mother, so after a half an hour, all the milk will turn to cheese inside the stomach of the calf. Because the lining, there are enzymes that are on the lining of the stomach that come out from the stomach of the enzymes in every animal. Any person, any animal who eats anything, so there are enzymes that come out to digest the food. So the milk inside the stomach of the calf will turn into cheese in a half hour. So people realized this, they would check calves, and they would see that the stomach is full of cheese. So they would scrape out the lining, they would scrape out the enzyme from the lining of the stomach, and put in a little spoonful of rennet into a big vat, a big container full of milk. You have more than shishim, you have 1,000 times shishim. And this one spoonful of rennet will do the trick and cause all of the milk to turn into cheese. So the Gemara says, the Chachami made a gzera de Rabbanon, the Tanoi made a gzera that you're not permitted to eat gevinas nachrim, cheese that's manufactured by nachrim. The Gemara gives different reasons for it. So the generally accepted reason is, Mepnesha ma'amidim osa be'or kevas nevela. The nachrim don't have kosher in it. They have non-kosher in it from a nevela. So because it's a dova hamamid, even though you have 100 times shishim, a dova hamamid is like bottle. Since the effect of the rennet will be noticed, milk is going to turn into cheese. It starts off as liquid and then it ends up to become solidified like cheese. A dova hamamid does not become bottle. So the Rimagash explains, why does the Gemara say that it's only a problem because Mamina Mosa Bor Kevas Nevela? The Nachrim use rennet from a Nevela animal. And if we'll make cheese and use rennet from a kosher geshachten animal, it will be okay. Isn't it an issue of Basa B'cholov? So Taisa says, yes, it is an issue of Basa B'cholov. It will be a problem of Basa B'cholov. So we don't accept Taisa Shita. We pass like the Rimagash and the Rambam, that since the rennet of a kosher geshachten animal is hetere, it's kosher, and basa b'chalav, the araisa, is only if the two are cooked together. If you don't cook the meat and the milk together, the worst it can be is going to be basa b'chalav, the rabbanon. And you have the shishim. When you put in a spoonful of rennet into a vat for a container full of milk, you have way more than shishim. So you can taste the flavor of the meat in the rennet. It tastes like cheese. Cheese is the flavor of the milk. The milk has a cheesy flavor now. It is. So even though it's a Dover Amamid, since it's a Tere, since the rennet is kosher from a geschlachten animal, so that doesn't aser. Dover Amamid only asers if the Dover Amamid was treif to begin with. But to take rennet from a kosher animal, kosher geschlachten animal, and to be mamid milk with it, will not pose a problem. We do it lahatchila. Will not pose a problem of basa b'chalal, because you have shishim, well over shishim, against the rennet, and the tam of the basa will not be tasted. And the gzera of mamid was only introduced when you're dealing with an iser, not if it starts with a heter. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Rimi Gash on several other occasions. His opinion is quoted with respect. The other cases are complicated. These are the two more famous cases. The one case is by Habal Yerush Eshishtoi, where we don't accept the Rimi Gash, and the husband has no right to say Kimli. Husband has no right to say, I hold like the Rimi Gash and the Rambam, because he said, because the Rambam was so kofuf to the Rimi Gash, we consider them as a shita yichido, as if it's only one opinion. And here, by the kevas mamid and the kevas kshera, we pass like the Rimi Gash against Taisus, that there's no din of dovra mamid if the rennet was from a kosher geshochten animal. The rennet comes from a kosher geshochten animal. We accept what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that that's okay.
Matter, Daddy. What matter?
Yeah, Kraft cheese. Those who used to eat Kraft cheese were assuming, like Rav Chaim Eiser's tshuva, that the rennet that was used was from the dried out bones of the dead camels in the Indian desert that became nifsal me'achilo. And then after many people were eating this Kraft cheese, so one of the rabbanim from the yeshiva sent a letter to the Kraft company, and he asked them, what is the source of their rennet? Does it come from these dried out bones of the camels in the Indian desert? They sent back a letter. Are you crazy? No, it comes from prime grade A U.S. quality beef. It's not nifsa achila at all. So it mamish comes from nevela. That's royal achila. So many of those who were relying on this Reb Chaim Moses heter came to the realization that it doesn't apply anymore. The Kraft cheese is not made from such rennet. It's made from rennet that is royal achila. Yeah, Yavish Gates, but here it's not Yavish Gates. Here they succeed in getting out the rennet from the meat without being Yavish Gates at all. The Ravid, just like he wrote Hasogas on the Rif, also wrote Hasogas on the Rambam. The Ravid didn't really mean to demolish the Rambam. There are several places, several instances where the Ravid does not disagree with the Rambam. He is interpreting, he explains what the Rambam is referring to. So the Ravid didn't mean to destroy the Rambam Sefer, he meant to touch it up. So he disagrees here and there, and whenever he doesn't disagree, he wants you to follow the Rambam. We are missing many Hasogas HaRavid, in manuscript there are many more, so we don't really have the right to assume whenever there's no Ravid that the Ravid agrees. But the Ravid didn't really intend to demolish the Rambam. It's interesting, I once read a sefer about the first Rishoner Rebbe. So they write there a story that the Rebbe once walked into the Beis Medrash and the Chassidim was screaming, and then when the Rebbe walked in, they were all quiet. So he said, what were they screaming about? What were they tumbling about? And why did they stop tumbling? So they were all embarrassed, they were all ashamed. So till finally one of them said, what? One of them had read in the Mor and the Ruchim, where the Rambam writes that the Greek philosophers had a deeper insight into the world than the Nevi'im, than the prophets in Tanakh. So they thought, how could the Rambam write such a thing? Ha chutzpah, to say that the Greek philosophers were on a higher madrega than the Rambam. So the Rishoner Rebbe said, you should realize that the plan in heaven was, I don't know if this is historically correct, but this is what they quote, the plan in heaven was that the Rambam was a descendant from the Malchus Beis David, and he was supposed to be the Melech, he was supposed to become the Melech HaMashiach. But because the Dor was not Roy Lekach, and his Mishnah Torah was going to be the constitution of the new Medina, because the generation was not Roy Lekach, so that's why Min HaShamayim, they saw to it that various Hasogas should be written to rip down the Rambam. So you have the Hasogas Haravid, you have the Agos Mamini on the bottom of the page, often disagrees with the Rambam, he presents the Shitas Bali HaTesvis, you have Hasogas HaRamach, and many others. Years ago there used to be more Hasogas on the Rambam. But the Rambam was so great, he was really right to be the Melech HaMashiach. And what the Rambam writes about the Greek philosophers, that they had a deeper insight into the world than the Nevi'im from the Tanakh, so he gave them a mashal amad of adayma, that the people in a certain community were subjects of a certain king, and they never ever saw the king. So the king put up signs one fine day that he's going to open the palace to the public, and whoever has any bakasha, whoever has any needs, he'll be there to listen to what they want to request, and he'll try to see to the best of his ability to honor their requests. So came the day, the appointed time, they opened the gates to the palace, and the farmers came in. They were all pashut, the farmers, so they all came in. So all the farmers saw the beautiful drapes and the carpets and the fancy designs and the paintings and the chandeliers, like we were visiting the palace. And they were standing ooing and eyeing and staring at everything. And one farmer asked one of the palace guards, there were so many doors to this reception hall, he asked one of the palace guards, which door will the king appear at? So he said, this door. So that farmer didn't want to spend time looking at the drapes and the paintings and the chandeliers and everything and the carpets. So he walked over to that door and he stood there for 25 minutes till the king, the door was open quietly and the king appeared. So the king says, how do you do? What can I do for you? So he says, I'm a farmer, I need another behemoth to pull the plow and shine, I need this. So the king wrote it down, shine. And no one else was standing in line. So the king had them close the door. When the door closed, then it was a big bang, and then all the other farmers realized they just lost their chance to speak to the king. So the Rishoner Rebbe said, that's what the Rambam meant. There was a hisgalus of Elokus to the Nevi'im and to the Greek philosophers. So the Greek philosophers were so involved looking at all of the Teva Ha'olam, looking at all the aspects of science, they didn't really have a chance to see Elokus itself. They didn't pay attention. Then they got exhausted. They used up all of their talents studying everything else, philosophy and science and mathematics and astronomy and everything else. And the Nevi'im stood and they looked at the Elokus. They saw the Hisgalos of Elokus. They missed all of the other sideshow. So they missed the chandeliers and they missed the paintings and they missed the carpets and they missed everything else. That's how the Rishoner said. It's famous, the Ravid, in two places, and in his Hasogas on the Rambam, writes that he disagrees with the Rambam on these two different places. One is about whether the Kedusha Space HaMikdash is still present today, and one is regarding Hadas Sheniktam Rosho, a detailed halacha in Hilchas Dalad Ninim. So the Ravid says that his position was Min HaShamayim Horolokein. From heaven they showed him that the din is like this. So there are those who interpret the Ravid literally. They think that the Ravid studied Kabbalah and he had some Hisgalus Min HaShamayim based on his Kabbalistic studies to figure out the halacha disagreeing with the Rambam. And many others assume that it's just a Melitza. Min HaShamayim Heroli just means I learned well and had a Siyata Dishmaya, and they came up with a conclusion differing with that of the Rambam. So it's famous, Rabbi Yitzchak mentioned the other day, that the Ramban and many other Mekubalim in Girona, in that area in Spain, got their Kabbalah from Talmidim of Rabbi Yitzchak Saginor, the son of the Ravid. So there are those who claim that the Ravid, the famous Ravid who wrote the Hasagas on the Rambam, knew a lot of Kabbalah, and his son Rabbi Yitzchak Saginor transmitted this Kabbalah to the later generations. There are others who say that these two passages in the Ravid, where he writes the Menashe Shemayim Herali, doesn't mean anything. It just means that he worked it out. And he figured out the correct shot.
200 or something.
Rabbi Yitzchak mentioned before that the Ran, the Rabbein Nissim, Rabbein Nissim, Reb Ruvein, the Ran Bar, lived in Granada. Rabbein Nissim is known for several works. He wrote thousands of tshuvas, but from the thousands of tshuvas, he emerged as a prominent figure after the Rashba passed away. But from the thousands of tshuvas, we only have printed 77 tshuvas, sach hakol. Some of them are pretty important. Others we have other sources. We don't really need the Ran. Several of the tshuvas play a crucial role in halacha. The Ran is also known, of course, for his commentary on the Rif, where he, if you study, let's say, Chulin. So if you want to review everything, so you go through the Rif with the Ran, and the Ran will quote all the major opinions. I'll tell you what the Taisa says, and what the Rambam says, and what the Rashba says. I'll give you a summary of what all the Rishonim say. The Ran is also known, the same Ran is also known for his drushes Aran. They identify that it's the same person. He has several drushes where he speaks about Inyonim of Hashkofa. One of the famous drushes of the Ran, one famous idea he has is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose Moshe Rabbeinu as the one to transmit the Torah? He was a kvad lashon. He couldn't speak well. So he has a famous answer. His explanation is that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have been a good speaker, so one might possibly think that the Jewish people were fooled into believing above a Maisa, that the Torah is Minash HaMayim. But because Moshe Rabbeinu was a kvad lashon, he was not a good public speaker. And when he spoke about politics, or he spoke about baseball, or some breakfast and supper, he would be akvad ve'akvad loshen. When he said over the halachas, he said it with a booming voice and a very clear speech. So that was the clear indication to all of the Shishim Riba of Bnei Yisrael that he's Shechina Medaberes mitoch granai. Because they knew Moshe Rabbeinu, he was not a good speaker. Only when he said over halachas did he say it over well. Ran has another, a lot of the drushes are famous. He has another idea in another drusha where he speaks about the function of the melech. One of the roles of the melech is din, and the role of the Sanhedrin, the role of the Rabbanim is din. So they're supposed to do the same thing. There's overlap over here. The melech is din of the malchus and din of the melech. The function of the melech is to paskin dinim, the function of Sanhedrin is paskin dinim. So he explains that it's a different kind of a din. The role of the melech is melech b'mishpat yamid eretz, to maintain law and order. So that's the kind of din he should do. The role of the Sanhedrin, the rabbanim, the paskin din, that's not to keep law and order, that's to bring the laws of HaKadosh Baruch Hu down to this world. We have a halacha that hefker bezn hefker. That din really originates by melech. The din really is that melech b'mishpat yamid eretz, din of the malchus din. When the government is not doing their job, then the bezdin has the obligation to take over the role of the government. And they should see to it that they should maintain law and order by making hefker bezdin hefker, which is really the role of the melech of din of the malchus din. So the later Paskim discussed this at length. This tshuva, especially the Avnei Nezer, has a long arichas on this. His drushes were reprinted many times, and it's by the same author as the Ran on the Gemara. Then the Ran is also known for his commentary on Chumash. They discovered Ksav Yad about 50 years ago, a commentary of the Ran on Chumash, it only covers part of Bereshis. At first they weren't too sure whether it's really by the same Ran who wrote on the Rif. Then they realized that there are chunks, there are passages in the commentary on Bereshis that are identical with what the Ran wrote in the Drushas. So they did, they identified it as the same Ran. He has a few just from his commentary on Chumash. Here and there he has a very original interpretation. Usually the Ran just says over what the earlier Rishonim say, and once in a while he has an original contribution. So in his commentary on Chumash, he has a very novel interpretation of the Nisayon of the Akedah. He raises the question, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would reveal himself to you and ask you, Kachnas Binchas Ichitcha, if you would have a direct Nevuah from the Rebbeinu Shlomo, you would be positive that that's a Nevuah, that this is the Rebbeinu Shlomo speaking to you. You would do the same thing also. So what was it? Why is it such a big Nisoyen? We always ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should remember the Schus of Akedas Yitzchak. If he would give someone a direct Nevuah, certainly the person would fulfill the Nevuah. So the Ran has a very original interpretation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu requested of Avraham Avinu, Kach No, so he claims that the Rebbeinu Shlom told Avraham Avinu, if you don't want to, you don't have to. But I'm asking you, maybe do me a favor. Maybe go out of your way. I'm not commanding you. If he would have commanded him, of course he's going to do it. He didn't command him. He said, it would please me very much if you would do this. And Avraham Avinu was prepared to do it, to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to please the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, even though he was never nitztaveh. This is quite an original interpretation. That kach noah es binchas yichidcha ein noah elo lashon bakosha, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam was saying, what's the expression? Poor favor. Poor favor. Could you please do it for me? Not really beloshon tzivui. He never instructed. Then he has another original interpretation, which I don't think appears in the earlier commentaries on the Chumash. Every so often he has, like in his commentary on the Rif, usually he just quotes earlier commentaries, and once in a while he has an original Chumash. Here also he has on Migdal Bovel. Why did the people in Migdal Bovel deserve to be punished? What was their aver? So Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Midrash that the people wanted to make a Migdal Rosh HaBashamayim. Why so high? They wanted to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why should he call all the shots? Hashem is in heaven above, so they thought that the sky is identical with heaven. We assume that the word Shamayim has two meanings. One is the sky, Kimei HaShamayim Al Haaretz, the sky. And then Shamayim is the heaven, where the Rebbeinu Shalom is in heaven. That's not the same as the sky. You can make a Migdal that'll go above the clouds, it'll be Bashamayim, it'll be in the sky, but he won't reach the Rebbeinu Shalom. Rebbeinu Shalom is not in the sky, he's in the heaven. It's a different word in English. It's a different word. So that's how Rashi quotes in the Medrash, that they wanted to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ran, in his commentary on Chumash, does not learn like that. He just quotes the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that kinus le tzaddikim tov lahem etov la'olam. When tzaddikim gather together, that's the best thing for the tzaddikim and the best thing for the world. They'll all be mechazik each other in avodas Hashem and shmiras hamitzvahs, and that's the best thing for the world. Kinus le rishoyim, when rishoyim gather together, is ra lahem v'ra la'olam. That'll be a disaster. When the world of rishoyim is united, that's awful. So he says, all they wanted to do was to make a United Nations. And that would have been a disaster. If all the Yomas Olam would join together, they were all of the Avodah Zarah. So if you would have a figure like Avraham Avinu, and all the nations in the world would be of the Avodah Zarah, they wouldn't allow Avraham Avinu to remain a monotheist. They would kill him. He's not living up to the religion. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam just wanted to spread them out. He didn't want that there should be achdus among the Rishayim. They didn't do any specific avera. But kinis l'Rishayim is ra lahem ra lo'olam. Ultimately, it'll lead to terrible things. Like, let's say now, in the United Nations, all the Ummah Shel Olam get together and they condemn Medinas Yisrael. Every so often, they condemn Medinas Yisrael. So kinis l'Rishayim is Ra'alahem Ra'aloilam, so that they were never really punished. Just their plan was foiled. They did not accomplish a United Nations to the extent that there should be no place for Avraham Avinu to run away to. So when Avraham Avinu discovered monotheism, and the people in his country were upset why he's not an Eved Avodah Zarah, so he left to another country. That was only possible because of the Dor HaFloga, because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was separated all of the Rishonim. We spoke a little earlier about the Rosh. The Rosh writes in his Truvas, and this is quoted by his son, the Tur, an Orach Chaim, that the following, the Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael, in the Shmoneh Esrei, you start saying the same Talmud Levracha on Zayin Cheshvan, and you ask this Bakosha, that's called She'ela, we ask for the rain up until Pesach. And after Pesach, we say the same bracha. We no longer say the same Talmud. In Bavel, they don't need the rain so early, starting from Zayin Cheshvan. So they only start saying the same Talmud Levracha 60 days after the Tkufa. 60 days after the Tkufa. That's approximately December 5th. So the Rosh says, whenever there's a discrepancy between the Minig and Eretz Yisrael and the Minig and Bavel, our practice is that we follow the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. That's the Rif in the end of Erevin writes. Whenever there's a discrepancy between Bavli and Yerushalmi, our practice is we follow the Bavli. But here, this is not a discrepancy in halacha between Bavli and Yerushalmi. It depends which country you live in. In Eretz Yisrael, they need rain starting from Zayin Cheshvan till Pesach, so they say the same Talamat at that time. In Bavli, they needed rain starting from December 5th until Pesach, and then from Pesach till December 5th was the dry season, so they say St. Talmud and Maneri. So the Rosh writes, when he lived in Germany, he had a machlekes with all the other rabbanim. He said, in Germany, like in New York, there is no dry season. It rains all year long. We need rain all year long. To have the records from the last several centuries, how much rain came down every day of the year. There is no dry season in the New York area. So the Rosh tainit, we should say the St. Talmud in Baruch Aleinu all year long in Germany, because there is no dry season. So he writes in his Truvas, he argued, he was outvoted in Farfal. No one listened to the Rosh. So in the later generations, many Gedolim thought that maybe the Rosh is right. It makes very good sense. Why do we follow that? Rashi writes on Maseches Tainis that we always follow the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. So the Rosh Tainis, what has it got to do with following the Bavli against the Rishonim? It depends on each country. If you live in Australia, you live in South Africa, the dry season is different and the rainy season is different. If you live below the equator, everything is different. So it should depend on each country. So that was his Tainis. And many of the Poskim say that perhaps it would be a good idea for those who live in the New York area to say the same Talamot there in Shema Koleinu. Or they say that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was once asked that someone in the summertime by mistake davened Shmoneh Esrei, and he by mistake said the same Talamata. But it was in Poland when it needed rain all year long. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik thought that in the end we certainly should rely on the Rosh, because it makes such good sense.
Okay, we are heading towards Granada in about an hour.